Thank you. Excellent. And just to let you know, the reason we have that line in front there is because every evening, Friday evening, the talk is streamed live online, and also a recording is taken so that people in many other parts of the world can either listen live or they listen later on YouTube. And these talks are very popular. I think the most popular one is that 800,000 people have viewed it, isn't it? 800, 9,000? Yeah, well, no, just talk, yeah. Yeah, 800,000 people have listened to those talks, so it's a huge audience. So that's why we make sure that people can actually see this here. Excellent. And some of the people who listen to it are in countries where you're not allowed to have Buddhist monks, you know, because it's illegal, but they still manage to get in, see it, which is wonderful. So that everywhere in the world people can listen. So anyway, for this evening's talk, I wanted to focus on something which we call choice. Because it's part of freedom. And sometimes we don't use that choice and we get in the prisons of anger, fear, worry about the past or the future. And not only that, that because we don't know how to exercise choice, we waste so much time worrying about what decision we should make. And once we've made the decision, just thinking, is it the right one? Was it the wrong one? And we tend to make ourselves just so anxious, so thinking too much, that we get too tired. It's one of the things which I know as a meditator. The more you think, the less energy you have. And the less energy you have, the less happiness. It's one of those experiences I hope everyone will have in their life. That, you know, through meditating, which is calming down the thoughts. That yes, you get sleepy sometimes, but when you keep calming down the thoughts and you re-energize your mind, that your mind gets so energized and so bright and mindful, it's very happy. It's a natural form of happiness. So part of the job of me teaching here is to find ways so we don't think so much. We don't worry so much. We don't dwell in the past so much. And this is part of it, by understanding what choice is and how we can manage choices in our life. And it goes very, very deep. And when you have understand what choice is, it does mean you have more freedoms. Because a lot of times, what is a prison anyway where you don't have any choice of what you're supposed to be doing and how you're supposed to be doing it, where you can go? Choices are taken away from you. And the idea of freedom is to be able to go wherever you want, do whatever you want. And we think that in our outside world, we think we do live in the free world. And that's a bit of a joke to me. The land of the free. That's supposed to be the United States. Have you ever been there? There's more people in prison in the United States than any other country in the world. So is it the land of the free? They chant that or they sing that in the national anthem. But what is actually freedom? And the ability to exercise choices and exercise them wisely. And of course, these days people have so much choice. And sometimes that we get so worried about just how many choices we have. You go in a supermarket when I was young. You know, I used to like muesli when I was young. And you couldn't find even one packet of muesli in a supermarket. You had to get oats and make your own. Nowadays, you get whole aisles of different types of muesli. Different brands, different flavors, different ingredients. There's just so much choice these days. And what happens to people? Because you don't know how to make your choice, you worry so much and waste so much time. Should I take this? Should I take that? Even in my monastery now, as Venerable Akadaka would know, we have so much food that it's, in the old days, it used to be so easy. You know, just one pot of curry and maybe another pot and you just took that and that was it. Yeah, it wasn't nice, but it was, you know, we went through the food really quickly. with no choice. And these days, and put a bit of this and a bit of that, oh, there's something better here, so take this out and get something else. Take forever. So sometimes we live in a time when there's incredible amount of choices. And this is a segue into one of my oldest of jokes. But there's always new people who come to this Friday evening, which is one of the reasons why I don't mind saying the old jokes again. I probably said this last week. I do apologize last week because I was so tired coming back from Indonesia, really exhausted. I don't know what I said last week. Can't remember any of it. But anyhow, here we go. That is the refugee who just came to Perth, Australia. And the social worker took him around to all the different things and took him into a supermarket for the first time. And in the supermarket, he came across an aisle called instant mashed potato powder. And so what is this? And so it's so easy. You just add hot water, stir it up, you get mashed potato. Have you ever had that? Instant mashed potato? And the fellow said, "Whoa, in the old country where I came from, you had to plow the field and sow the little seed potatoes, had to wait till they're ripe and then dig them up. And once you dig them up, you had to wash them and peel them. Then you had to boil them, then you had to smash them up to get mashed potatoes. Oh, these days it's so easy." Another are instant noodles. You know how hard it was to make noodles in the old days? Now you just get them out of the pack, pour in hot water, and you've got instant noodles. Amazing. Milk powder. Just add hot water, you get milk. He said, "Oh, why, in the old days you used to get a cow and just pour the atom bucket under water really hard. These days just had powder." And egg powder too. Oh, we had to go and find the chickens and crack the eggs and just to make sort of omelette or whatever, scrambled eggs. These days just milk powder and egg powder and potato powder. And in the next aisle, he couldn't believe his eyes. Baby powder. Because in the old country, we had to get a woman. It'd take 9 months. These days, you just add water and get baby. I couldn't have said that last week because you laughed instead of groaned. So that was a good one. I'm on a winner. So, so there's so much choice. Now, the problem is we have so much choice these days that it causes us too much stress because we don't know how to make decisions. And this was somebody, people keep coming up to me and said, "Oh, should I marry this man or should I not marry him? Or should we just live together? Should I have a kid or not have a kid? The world's really overpopulated, but I really feel I need a kid. If I don't have it now, time is clicking and I don't know what I'm going to do later on. Should I change my job? Should I get this job? Should I go and retire? Should I become a monk or should I become a nun? Or what the hell should I do? Too many choices." And so people, you waste so much of your brain power on worrying about choices or what you should do in your life. And some of these are big choices with huge consequences. And those are the ones you worry about so much. Should I get divorced or should I stay with this guy, work it out? What should I do? Now, first of all, I've said before, I'm not going to repeat this. When you do make a choice, don't think about it too much, but feel it. Feel the answer. Always go with your gut feeling, except if you've got irritable bowel syndrome. Then don't go with your gut feeling. Now that's not just a joke there. If you're feeling negative, upset, that's the wrong time to make a decision. Because if it's out of negativity, and you usually make terrible decisions. So relax first of all, be peaceful, which is one of the reasons why I like people to meditate first of all. No, make the mind relaxed. For goodness sake, stop thinking about it, because that means you get very tired, your brain isn't working properly, you can't make clear decisions, you're tired, you're negative, you're upset. So, be quiet first of all, be calm. And then, amazingly, many of the best decisions in your life, they just come to you. It's a great way of making decisions. You don't think about it. Thinking about it just makes you more confused. So an example of this is one of the benefits of learning how to meditate. One of our members, a long time ago, she's passed away. I was just listening to see if her ex-partner is here, but he's not here this evening. She was a senior social worker here in Perth. And her job was this terrible, terrible job of she was the person who had to decide whether children would be taken away from their mother because their mother was like a drug addict or just an alcoholic and was not really competent to look after her kids. And it was in the kids' best interest to take them away from their mother. That's a really, really difficult decision to make, because the bond of a kid to the mother to the kid, that's really hard to separate those two. But, you know, you can imagine that some situations, some cases, it was in everybody's best interest to take the kids away from their mother. And she had to be the one who finally signed off on it. Now that is stress, because the consequences are huge. But she came to one of my meditation retreats in the old days when we used to have them in North Perth. And she came late. I remember her turning up. I never saw her for the first evening. She came in the middle of the night. I only saw her the next day. She apologized for coming late because she said she was in the office trying to tie up all the loose ends. You can't do that. It's impossible to tie up all the loose ends. It's one of the reasons just why you just have to do your best and then let go. So she had all these very difficult cases she had to make decisions on when she went back to work after the retreat. But she was really good in the sense that she had learned how to let go, to stop thinking and worrying about these things. Yes, she had to make a choice, but the best way of making a choice is not worrying about it, putting it aside. And what happened after 3 or 4 days into the retreat, she was really peaceful, getting some nice quiet meditation. And she came to see me afterwards, said, after this very deep meditation, so peaceful, all these ideas bubbled up, all these solutions, and they were so innovative, so amazing. She said, no way could I think that solution. It was just seeing things in a total different way. What we call these days seeing outside the box, or thinking outside the box. And on the subject of thinking outside the box, I have a cartoon which is wonderful about when you should not think outside the box. There was a man, and he was talking to his cat, who was sitting next to the litter box, telling his cat, "Cat, never think outside the box." The box is where it does its poo and stuff, okay? A very nice cartoon. So for cats, don't think outside the box. Do your stuff in the box. But to get those sorts of really great solutions to very difficult problems, she had to be still first of all, and then the answers came to her. Now that's such a brilliant way of solving some of the big decisions you have to make in life. Don't think about them. Because what happens is like your brain, your mind, if you want to call it your mind, you know, it is like a sort of computer. You put in the information and wait for the answer to come out. And if you keep pushing it and you want the answer right now, right now, right now, right now, it never comes out. It's never a good one. It needs its time to work through the system of your mind. Give it that time and then the solution comes out. Obviously, you need to get all the information in first of all, which is one of the reasons when making decisions and choices, the thing which the Buddha said was always be careful of the four things. He's always four this and three that. It's great because it helps you remember each one of them when there's four of them. Sometimes I can only remember three and I know I've missed one out, so it helps me. So the four things you have to remember before making decisions, making sure, tick these four boxes. You're not acting out of just your own personal desires and needs. It's not just in it for you, because decisions affect other people as well as you. So, you know, look at the bigger picture. And it's not just for others as well. You're concerned as well. So you're not acting selfishly. You're not acting selflessly. You know, sometimes people think you should be selfless, which means that you get burnt out. There's nothing in it for you. You don't really matter. It's really that's a negativity towards your own needs and requirements. You count as well. So do other people. You balance everybody. It's all about us, remember? Okay, there's somebody getting married, and I never told them this story before, but it's one of my classic ones, and you've heard it before. In a marriage, you never think of yourself. So if you're married, never think of yourself. That's selfishness. That's not a marriage. If you're married, never think of your partner. Don't think of your wife. Don't think of your husband. That's not a marriage either. That's selflessness. You get burnt out that way. In a marriage, you never think of yourself. You never think of your partner. You only think of us. The pair. Not me, not him, not her, but us. That's what a marriage, that's how marriage works. The third way. Too many people, they're selfless. Your happiness is my whole life, darling. I'm just going to give it to you. Whatever you want. You sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice until you've got nothing left to give. You're burnt out. The relationship is over. Selfishness, it's just about what I want, what I need, my requirements. Again, that's not a marriage. It has to be about us, what we need. Not what I or she or he needs. We. It's all about us. So that's the first thing when you're making decisions. It's about us. Everyone who's involved in the outcome, which includes you and includes others. Great balancing, but when you don't forget yourself, when you don't forget others, everyone is included. That's the first tick box. Number two, never act because you're really pissed off. You're really upset. You're really angry. Because you regret those decisions again and again and again. So for goodness sake, if you're angry, upset, don't do anything. Don't make any decision. You're not in the right mood. And also, it comes back to bite you. That's really when you make a decision out of anger, it's always going to be bad karma. And it comes back and says, oh, Christ, what did I do that for? I shouldn't have done that. Now, the third one is not making a decision out of stupidity. For goodness sake, get as much information as you possibly can about what's going to happen. As much information. Now, you don't think about the information. You gather it. You program it into your brain. You put it in the data. And then you let the mind work it out. So don't act out of stupidity. And one of the most fascinating, the fourth part of this checklist of four things you should do before you make a decision, is don't act out of fear. Because fear controls so many people's lives. It stops them being adventurous and making interesting decisions. So maybe putting your finances on the line. Now, doing something which is a bit risky, but you know, you work it all out, and I'm just going to go for this. See what's going to happen. Too many people are just stunted because of fear. We don't want to give it a go. But most importantly, people are afraid. What will other people think of me if I do this? You imagine my life as a monk. I can't be concerned what other people think of me. Dress like this. I've been dressing like this for 42 years. Okay, now here in Nolamara, people know who you are. Even in Perth, it's pretty easy to be a monk because people know who you are. But I remember years ago in some countries, they would look at you and they would start abusing you. They would start to say, this, like this one girl, 33 years ago here in North Perth, she took one look at me. She's only about 14 years of age. I can remember this so clearly. Here I was in my robes in North Perth. She came out and looked at me. She put her hands on her hip. She was trying to effect maximum disgust, which was a 14-year-old. She tried. She didn't really achieve it, but it was very funny to watch. And she looked me up and down and said, "You're dressed like a girl. You're sick," she said. I remember that. And of course I burst out laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd heard in weeks. When people try and abuse you. That's a wonderful way of dealing with abuse. Just find it so funny. And they... And anyway, that just totally sort of discombobulates them. That's one of my best words, discombobulate. Confuses them. They don't know really what's going on next. They don't know how to act next. They want you to get angry. When you laugh, that really sort of confuses them. But anyway, that's a nice way of but I get... Oh, I always remember the time when I went to visit my family in England. I got some relatives in the Midlands of England. My mother was born in Stoke-on-Trent in the middle of England. And they still got relations up there. And I went to visit them once. And in the morning, you know, go for a nice walk. It's a nice spring day. And that's me in my robes, walking along. And actually, honestly, people were pointing at me and laughing. Look at him. Look. And you know, I've never had such, you know, abuse like that ever in my life before. Just people pointing at me and laughing. And I thought that, you know, these people in this Midlands of England, they're just so rednecks. They're just so uncultured and uneducated. And just they're really mean and nasty. Laughing at a good monk like that, pointing out. And then I found out the reason why. Because we went, turned the corner of the street, there's this big billboard. It's a circus was in town. It was advertising the circus. And I realized why people were pointing at me and laughing. They thought that I was one of the clowns. There's a clown. It was actually nice laughter. It wasn't sort of putting me down. They thought I was funny. So anyway, at least I made people laugh in the morning, which was an amazing thing to do in that part of the world. But so you don't worry what people think of you. So you make a decision in the confidence you know what you're doing. No fear, getting all the information, no sort of ill will, no personal stuff which you want to do. That means it's usually a good decision. And also means that you wait till the decision is made, and the decision comes to me, come to you. It's quite obvious what you should do. And follow that. Thinking about it is the problem. You waste so much time. Have you ever had a big decision to make, and you think this way, you think that way, and you can never find the answer? You know, sometimes people, because I'm a monk and I'm well known, they come and ask me to make the decisions for them. No way! It's your decision. Because if I made the decision for you, I'm taking away an important part of your freedom. Your freedom to make your own decisions and also to get wisdom from them, to learn. That's how we learn in life. If all the decisions were made for you, yeah, you'd have an easy life, but you learn nothing. That's why in Buddhism we don't tell you what to do. That's one of the things which attracted me. But we help you make your own decisions, which is what I'm doing now. So, a decision comes up, and then what do? Maybe this is not the right decision. Maybe I should think about it again. Maybe I should wait for a few more days. Now that is absolute stupidity. Because people misunderstand what is a right decision and a wrong decision. Now I'm going to tell you what's a right decision and a wrong decision now. Whatever decision you make, it's not right, it's not wrong, yet. It's what you do afterwards makes it a right decision or a wrong decision. Give you an example, you decide, oh, I'm going to marry this girl. Is that right or wrong? Neither. It's what you do afterwards. Are you going to make that relationship work? Are you really going to put some effort, some care, some wisdom, some commitment into that relationship? If you put that commitment into the relationship, you make it work. You make it a right decision by what you do afterwards. Or you decide to take a new job. Start your own business, say. You start your own business. Is that a good decision or a bad decision? It's what you do after you made that decision. Makes it right or wrong. If you sort of heave this, it's, oh, it's so easy. You don't put the effort in. You don't put the time in. You don't put the care in. Of course, you make it a wrong decision. So with decisions and in life, you find there is no such thing as a right decision or a wrong decision before you make it. It's what you do afterwards. That is crucial. You can find you make almost anything work in this world if you put a lot of effort into it. You make it the right decision afterwards. Well, what most people do, they made a decision and they don't put real effort into making the decision right. They start worrying, oh, maybe I shouldn't have made that decision, or maybe I should have gone another way. Oh my goodness, I'm in big trouble now. I shouldn't have done that. Shut up and get on with making the decision right. Instead of just going backwards and worrying, oh, was it good, was it wrong, was it right? The past is just a hindrance, it's a burden, it's an obstacle to the present and to the future as well. The past is the problem, it's not the solution. You don't learn from the past. You're obstructed by the past. You learn from the present. That's where you learn. That's where the growth is. That's where the wisdom comes. That's where the compassion. That's where life happens. Now. This is where the future is being made. Now. The past is just a total waste of time, basically. Not totally, but pretty much. So, when you made the decision, make it work. That's really important. And you find that then you'd never waste time looking back. You know, a lot of times people keep looking back and they say, if I'd have married someone else, if I hadn't chosen you, darling, because there's this really nice guy and I just let him go and I married you instead, darling. Oh, if only. You don't know what might have happened if you'd married that other guy. He could have been like a domestic abuse champion. I was looking for the right word. That's not the right word, but you know what I'm talking about. He might have been a real sort of nasty piece of works. Oh, you know, maybe that's a beautiful girl. I should have married her. Like, I like telling people, you know, I wasn't born a monk. I fell in love when I was 19 and it just didn't work out. Or what happens if, you know, if I hadn't sort of messed up and if I, you know, she, I carried on going out with her, I could be married and have grandchildren now. Who knows? She could have been a real scallywag and had lots of boyfriends on the side and lots of sort of abuse. I don't know what might have happened. The point is that when you look on the past, you can never say if something else had happened. Because you don't know what might have turned out if you'd made a different choice in life. This is where I coined a new word. Because in religion, we have like a word called the ineffable. It's usually used for like for God or Nirvana or the ultimate reality. They say it's ineffable, which means you can't really understand it. You can't get your head around it. It's just too complicated, too deep, too profound. It's ineffable. That didn't make any sense to me, but it was a nice sounding word. So I changed one vowel in that word to make it a useful word. Instead of ineffable, I called it ineffable. And that's the past. The past is ineffable. You can't if your past. You can't say if I'd have worked harder at school. If I'd have gone to another course. If I hadn't come to the Buddhist Society. If I hadn't been the president. If I hadn't become a monk. You can't if the past. There's no way of knowing what might have happened if something happened, if you made a different choice, which is one of the reasons I never if my old decisions. They're made, finished, and I stop wasting time worrying about it, and then I make sure I make it work. That is really important. And it also gives you a great sense of freedom. When you make a choice and it's finished, so you're free now to make it work instead of always being a prisoner of your past, doubting the decision instead of going forward and making it work. And that type of freedom, to be able to choose like that, is not just in your life. It makes you adventurous, it makes you successful, it makes you really go forward in life rather than always worrying about the past. It makes you go forward in life and it makes you go forward, especially in your mental world. Because so often we may feel that we are free in the external world. We have freedom of choice. But so many people these days do not realize how much choice they have in the inner world. They don't exercise that choice, and so they're not free at all inside. Forgiveness is a choice. When people ask me, why can't we forgive each other? Why is it that there's somebody you respect, you love, you care for, but they hurt you? Why can't, I mean big time, not small time, big time. Why can't you forgive them? A first step in forgiveness is always realizing it can be done. That you do have the choice. You have the freedom to forgive or not forgive. It is totally in your power. But too many people don't know they can exercise it so they never do. You can. It can be done. You have that choice to let go of the past. And obviously, if someone has hurt you, they have actually taken away your freedom. That's why you suffer so much. I can't be happy because what that person did to me. As I said last week, when we had our monastery robbed, I think I said this last week, yes, they can take away our generator and our chainsaws, but I'll never allow any thief to steal my happiness. That is your choice. When someone robs you, they burgle your house. Yeah, they take away your money, they take away your goods, they mess up the house. But why on earth do you let them steal your happiness and peace? You don't need to do that. You have a choice. And when you realize you have that choice, that changes the whole ball game. Yeah, okay, it's, you know, you lost a lot, you've got to go and get your credit cards all changed, you've got to sort of claim on the insurance, you've got to tidy up the house, you've got to change the locks. Yeah, it's a pain in the neck, but at least they're not stealing your happiness and your security. You can still have the choice to keep that. Exercise that choice. Somebody calls you a pig. You have a choice not to get upset. It's amazing that when I tell people you have that choice, you have that choice, sometimes a light bulb goes on. What you mean? I can do that? Yeah. Just seeing that you have that choice makes it possible for people to exercise that choice. You think, well, I don't have to. Because a lot of times we are just conditioned by our culture, we do what everybody else does, and because of that we just forget, we don't realize that we do have choices which we never exercise. We've got choice not to be afraid. You don't have to be afraid. Okay, you've got a lump in your breast. Are you afraid? Breast cancer. Ah, I'm going to die. You don't have to think like that. You have a choice not to. And you come to places like this, and when I suggest you don't need to think like that, you actually opens up new avenues, new possibilities. You can actually go into this life, into the doctors, not feeling afraid. And you all know, if you do feel afraid and you've got some lump, some problem in the body, that fear is going to probably make it much worse. Fear kills more people than any other disease. That is a terrible thing. Because when we get fear, afraid, we can tense up, we actually make what we're afraid happen. There's lots of examples. Okay, this is one of the nicest stories. It was good old Grasshopper, one of my favorite stories. I know that sometimes people say, Ajahn Brahm, why do you keep telling the same old stories? You know, one of the reasons why is because actually I enjoy telling them. I'm really selfish. And there's also lots of people who haven't heard it. But it's a great story about fear. And that was in the old TV series Kung Fu. Now, you know, as a monk, you don't have a TV. I don't have a TV in my monastery. There's no TVs there anywhere else, nor here in the rooms. You know, every now and again you can come to our monastery and look in the rooms. You don't have that sort of stuff there. Apparently you can get it on your iPad now, but I don't know how to do that. I'm just so old. I don't know how, you know, you can actually get movies on your iPad. But anyway, you don't have any of those. Don't watch those. But I used to, before I became a monk, 42 years ago, there was a TV series. It was the only thing remotely connected to Buddhism. Kung Fu. Well, you know, it was Asian. And so I used to watch that every week. And, you know, the little character Grasshopper, this little young boy who was trained to be a monk, and his master, the blind but very, very wise abbot of the monastery, and little Grasshopper was a disciple, and the master was really wise, and one day he took him into this dark room in the back of the monastery. And of course the master couldn't see. And so he asked Grasshopper, the first time Grasshopper was let into this secret room in the back of the monastery, Grasshopper, what do you see? And of course it was on the TV, so I could see as well. It was a swimming pool, like an indoor swimming pool inside this room. He said, what do you see? He said, I see like a swimming pool, there's water in there. Just go to the edge, but be careful, little grasshopper. What do you see in the bottom of the pool? So I could see too. It was bones, human bones. What are they doing in there? And the master said, be careful, grasshopper. That is not water. That is acid. Concentrated, deadly acid. What else do you see? I got scared as well. It's amazing in a movie. I was sitting at home, no acid anywhere. But you know, you really get caught up in these things. And I was a bit scared too. My goodness, get back a bit. What else do you see? And he said, there's a plank of wood going from one side of the pool to the other. He said, yes, grasshopper. Every monk who comes through this training has to walk from one end of that plank to the other over the pool of concentrated, deadly, burning acid. And those bones you saw, those bones were of little novices like you who didn't make it to the other side, who fell in. And you could see a little grasshopper just really scared. And me in my lounge room in England, I was also scared. But then he took him outside and he said, for the next week you have no other duties, no chanting, no other sweeping or anything else in the temple. Because there's another plank of wood, exactly the same size and length, but just on two bricks in the courtyard. Just practice. Because 7 days from now, you have to go through this test. And I don't want to lose you. So for 7 days, the grasshopper was, it's easy to balance on a piece of wood over a courtyard. No problem at all. He could do it as blind as his abbot. Do it backwards, dancing, on one leg, anything was really easy. But after 7 days, the real test. You know how it's like people go to school, you can answer all the questions so easily, but when you go in the exam room, you stuff up every time. Fear. So anyway, a little grasshopper was taken into the room when he had to do the real test. And it was really exciting. You know, the TV, you have to make it exciting. I think the music changed, you know, just the drums or whatever it is, to make it look exciting. So the little grasshopper got on the end of the piece of wood. And he looked around. He didn't need to sort of hear any voices. He could see from his body language what he was saying. Please don't make me do it. I'm scared. I'm only a little fellow. Walk! Shouted the abbot. So the little grasshopper started walking on the plank. He started walking. He was so confident outside, but over the acid. Imagine concentrated, burning, deadly acid. One misstep and you're in big trouble. So he could see him start to wobble a little bit. And then he started to sway. He was losing his balance. And it really looked like he was going to fall in. And that's when the advertisements kicked in. I hate, do they still have those ads on? Just the most important points. I really hate it. And there's those stupid ads about this toothpaste makes your teeth whiter. That, you know, this soap powder does your... That's crazy. I want to get back to see what happened to my hero, little grasshopper. Now, the adverts lasted forever, but then we were back again in this dark room. And there was back again watching the TV. And it was really exciting. What's going to happen? And it, you know, they always go back a few seconds. And there he was, started to see him wobble, then to shake, and then to start to sway, and then... He fell in! Grasshopper fell in! Oh my goodness, what happened? And he was splashing around in the acid. And Monk was just so compassionate, the master was laughing his head off. I thought, I shouldn't say what I thought. There are kids here. I thought, this is what a nasty piece of work this master was. His disciple was burning in the acid, he was just laughing. And then I realized, and Grasshopper realized, it wasn't burning. And that's when the master said, it's only water. You know, it's only a trick to say it was acid. We just threw those bones down there for special effects. That's all. And then came the great punchline. You know, the master said, why did you fall in? Fear pushed you in, little grasshopper. Fear pushed you in. And I thought, wow, what a wonderful teaching that was. If he'd have known it was water, he would have run across that plank thousands of times without ever falling in. But when you think it's acid, you will fall in. Fear pushed him in. That's why I say fear kills so many people. Fear makes you fail. The fear makes it into a cancer. Be careful of fear. That is the problem. That's, again, stops people making choices. Really wholesome, good, healthy choices. So you can, you have the choice to let go. Don't be afraid of forgiveness. Don't be afraid of what other people think of you. Don't be afraid of letting go when people call you an idiot or foolish or stupid or ugly. Don't be afraid. You've got a choice not to allow that to steal your happiness and peace. So all the worry in the world, all the fear in the world. But some people were asking me when I was over in Indonesia, they said, young people are really afraid of climate change, overpopulation, maybe, you know, Islamic State, terrorism. It's such a dangerous world these days. Actually, this was a joke. I don't mind telling this one. This is a joke I got from a Muslim in Indonesia. He said, you know, that heaven used to be such a wonderful place, so peaceful and so safe. Now, heaven's a very dangerous place. There's so many terrorists up in heaven. When you sleep, you don't know where the next bomb's going to go off. A Muslim told me that joke. A great Muslim's great sense of humour. But anyway, so even heaven's not safe anymore. too many terrorists up there. Anyway, that was their joke. Back to the story about what I was talking about choices. That when you realise just how much power you have to make choices, it gives you so much more freedom. And that is also important to realise when you're meditating, when you're living your life, is one of the great choices which we have, which is what Buddhism always would recommend, was the choice to say no, to restrain, to stop, which is a great choice to make. Because sometimes we think that just, you know, the momentum is so great that we can't stop our anger, we can't stop our fear, we can't stop our lust or whatever. But you find that, you know, with a little bit of mindfulness, you always have this power to say, no, I won't do this. And that's such important to people who suffer from addictions in life. Now, addictions are not just to alcohol or drugs or to gambling. Sometimes they're just addictions to bad speech, you know, especially with people you live with, you know, your partner. You know, one of the monks, this is Venerable Guo Jun in Indonesia, he said this very wonderful little simile. You know that when people are in love, they whisper to each other, I love you, darling. They use whispers when you're in love. But when you're upset, you shout, you stupid old cow! You idiot man! Why? It's because when you're close to someone, you only need to whisper. But when you're distant from each other, that's when you shout. I thought, what a wonderful simile that is. When you're close, you don't need to shout, you just whisper. But when you're distant, I don't mean physically distant, but emotionally distant from the person you live with, that is when you shout. And that's the way to stop the shouting. Close the distance between you and your partner, between you and your kids, between you and your enemy. Close that distance, and you don't need to shout anymore. Interesting little metaphor. But anyway, you always have that ability to actually to say, no, I'm not going to say those terrible words. Exercise that choice. Because sometimes the way that people speak to each other is just so nasty. Always, you know, pointing out the other person's fault, saying terrible things, being so nitpicky and nasty. You have the choice not to go that place. That turns your relationship, your marriage, into sort of a nasty place to live. You don't want to talk to each other because the only thing you hear from your partner is just criticism and negativity. And these are two really good people. People actually come to the temple and always really, no, really kind to me. And I see their kindness. Why can't they speak kind words to their partner? Because they don't know how to stop the bad habits. Bad habits, this is what I call addictions. You do have the choice to say no. When you know you have that choice, and you remember it, you exercise it. You have the freedom to say things in a different way, to do things in a different way. My little exercise for you, to show just how much choice you have and why you don't exercise it, is when you brush your teeth tonight or tomorrow morning. I hope you brush them either tonight or tomorrow morning, one of the two, maybe both. When you brush your teeth, a little mindfulness exercise, where do you start from? Are you one who starts in the top middle, or the top left, or the bottom right? If you notice, you always brush your teeth in the same way, start in the same place, creatures of habit, never actually really knowing what you're really doing, just automatically, you've done it so many times. Tomorrow morning, I challenge you, live on the wild side. Brush your teeth in a different place. Go on. Be courageous. Be dangerous. Don't be just a creature of habit. Do it differently. But what it does, it shows you have the ability to make that choice, to do things different, not to be a creature of habit. Which means we can do that every morning. When you're with your partner, when you're with your friends, you don't always keep doing the same old mistake again and again. You have the choice to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do things differently. And it's wonderful, actually, when I see people do that. Change their whole marriage. Change their whole life. Change their addictions. You don't have to keep having that addiction to alcohol or to a drug or to anything. You have choice. Know that. Know how to make those choices. And you find you've got this incredible freedom. The freedom of choice. You don't have to be in the prison of your past habits and addictions. Because they are prisons. And they cause so much pain and suffering to people. People don't realize how much choice they have. It does take mindfulness. It's part of it. Being aware that you have that choice and being aware how that choice is made and actually doing it. And then you can change your life and have a happy time. And I'm not just saying that out of compassion. I am saying that mostly out of selfishness. Because after I give my talks, people are always lining up to ask me about this decision and that decision and about this problem and that problem. And I go, I'll just get so many headaches. And it's not my problems. You asked me about your marriage. I became a monk to avoid those problems. About your kids, I haven't got any kids. What would I know about business? What would I know about business? I'm a monk. I just want an easy life. So this is my recommendation for an easy life. You have the choice. Exercise that choice. Claim your inner freedom. Claim it. Don't ask me to give it to you. I just told you, you already have it. Exercise it. And then you know what freedom is. Thank you. Very good. If you want to live on the wild side and clap, you're allowed to clap. If you want to say boo, you're allowed to. Exercise your choice. Don't be afraid what other people think of you. Boo, boo. Okay, let's see what we've got on the internet. Here we go. Da, da, da. Okay. From the USA, I've got four today, from Australia, from Germany. I have difficulty deciding between hope and action versus being content with the situation, which you spoke about in a previous talk. Isn't a matter when there's time to do get everything you've got? Exactly. So people have the difficulty, should you act or should you just let things be? Usually I would have default just not to act at all, leave things be, because I've got so many articles. Doctors going on strike in Jerusalem for 2 weeks. And the death rate plummeted. Honestly, they only did emergency surgery and not so many people died. there was a big spike in the United States of hardly anybody dying of cardiac problems, about three times every year. It was a time when all the cardiac specialists go on a conference. When they were at a conference instead of in the hospitals, people never died. The evidence is there. When the governments aren't in session, usually the economy goes pretty well. People mess around with stuff. They don't know how to let things grow by themselves and develop by themselves. So a lot of times I would default doing nothing. But when there is something you can do, then of course then you give it everything you've got. So action versus being content. The hope, my hope is that sometimes if I don't do anything, things sort themselves out. And so often that's so true. You know, if I get involved, I usually mess things up and make it worse very often. So just like the monks in monastery, I'm supposed to be their teacher, I just let them grow. Protect them and let them grow by themselves. So anyway, a lot of times, default is to do less. Because people are so tired doing stuff, fixing up problems. Haven't you been fixing up problems all week? You've got a weekend now. It's a long weekend. How about not fixing up any problems? Really having a holiday. It's supposed to be a public holiday. Ha ha ha, it's not a public holiday. You've got to catch up on all those jobs in the house. No holiday at all. I realize we have many choices in life. This is from somewhere else, from Carla. And one is not to worry. You can worry if you want to. That's your choice. I'm not going to tell you not to worry. It's your choice. If you want to worry, be happy worrying. Sometimes it's easy to do, to practice. What advice do you have on this? Okay, that somebody asked me, they wanted another of my little certificates. I call them licenses. Started off with a grumpy license, and I gave out happy licenses. I forget what she wanted, a worry license. That I give them permission to worry. Because they don't think they're free to worry. They think you shouldn't worry. So I want to give you freedom. If you choose to worry, then go for it. So these days, people think they have got no freedom at all, so they need to get a license from some government official or some authority, and they think I'm their spiritual authority. So they feel that they're very guilty, they're a Buddhist, they shouldn't feel grumpy, they shouldn't feel unhappy. So they don't have that freedom anymore. So just to being rebellious, I write out these licenses. Nice letterhead, good Gothic script, just like, you know, like your a degree you get from a university. And this license grants, and I put the name underneath, permission to worry, signed Ajahn Brahm. It's a bit of a joke, but it's not just a joke, there's something serious there. The seriousness is giving you freedom. You don't have to be happy. Oh, what a freedom that is. I'm a monk. I don't have to be happy all the time. You can be tired. You can be upset. That is the sort of freedom. So you're not really worried what other people think of you. You're not putting on shows. You're not trying to please other people. You're being who you are, yourself. So if you're grumpy, you have my full permission. I give you a license to be grumpy at any time, for any reason, for the rest of your life. Imagine giving that to your partner in life. Give it to your wife. Because sometimes you feel so guilty about getting up being grumpy. Give it to your husband. You've got permission to be a pain in the ass. And sign it. And then he won't be such a pain in the ass for you. Because it's trying to be who you're not. That causes the problems. So, you have choices in life, not to worry. I think you should know from this talk how to do that. What advice do you have on this? If you really need it, I'll get your certificate. What if you made the wrong choice and you realize when it's too late? It's not the wrong choice, it's just a choice. So, look, you know the old story. You go left instead of right. And on the left, it was what you say is a wrong choice. You fall, you tread in the dog poo. I'm not going to say shit, but that means saying shit, so I'm in trouble again. You tread in the dog poo. Is that a wrong choice? Of course it's not the wrong. I don't know how many times I've told this simile. It's not a wrong choice at all, because you tread in the dog shit. Excellent. Well done. Take it home with you and dig it in, scrape it off, dig it in under the mango tree or the apple tree, whatever tree you've got in your garden. And 1 year later, your apples are going to be so juicy and so sweet. And you always remember what you're eating when you eat. You sink your teeth in that incredibly sweet, delicious apple. It's dog shit, isn't it? That is what you're eating. That's where it came from. You can't deny that. It's dog shit. But you've transformed it. So was it a mistake? Was it a wrong decision? You trod in the dog shit in life? The things went shitty. Of course it's not a wrong decision. If you learn how to make that decision work, whatever happens in your life, don't ever think it was a wrong decision. It's only a wrong decision if something happens which is unpleasant, painful, difficult, and you don't make use of it. Then it becomes a wrong decision. Looking back with guilt, with remorse, that makes the decision wrong. Make it work, and then the decision is always right. Last in Germany, I practice meditation and get strong nausea and head spinning feelings, and I have to stop. Which choice should I make? If it is the meditation which I teach, then go and get another teacher. That's obviously wrong. But usually, you get nausea and head spinning if you put too much force in the meditation. You're trying too hard. If you followed the meditation I was teaching here at the very beginning, focus on your body first of all and learn how to relax it. Because look, I did mention last week, about 10 days ago when I was in Indonesia, I was vomiting at night time. I ate something over there, I don't know what I eat, the people give me some, they try the very best. But in the middle of I was over there giving talks and thousands of people, literally. And then after the question time, about 10 o'clock, I knew there was something wrong. So I went back to my room as fast as I could. So your tummy felt very sore afterwards. But then, what I teach you, I practice myself. Feel just this nausea in your stomach. Feel it as much as you can. And then relax it. Relax it. All stuff wasn't all out, because when I woke up in the morning, I had to go and vomit again. But I had about 4 hours sleep, which was great, you know, just perfect, beautiful sleep by just relaxing my stomach. It was a stomach, not the guts, I hadn't got down that far yet. Relaxing it, mindfulness, be aware of the sensations, and learning how to be kind to them. And it all relaxed, 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 enough to go into a nice deep sleep. When I woke up in the morning, you know, felt there was a problem there again, and got the last of it out, which was great. So that's actually, if you follow the meditation which I'm teaching here, especially the first part with the body, you can relax your body so much. You don't force it. This is the most important thing. If you force it, you feel the body tense up. The nausea gets much worse. And you spin even more. But if you relax, relax. The mindfulness giving you feedback. How can you, from Germany, get the nausea to feel less nauseous, to relax it? What do you need to do? And you find if you're mindful of the nausea getting less, the nausea getting worse, you'll find how to let go of that nausea. And also, what you do there is letting go, is kindness. Once you learn that, you apply it to your mind. Ooh, get great meditations. Okay, any questions from Australia, from the Perth? No questions, which means no one's going to actually line up afterwards to ask me questions. Of course you are. Okay, you're most welcome to as well. So thank you all for listening. We can now go and pay respects to Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and then whatever you need to do, you can line up, ask me questions, say hello, whatever you want.
sukhadikano.